Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's Friday evening, Friday afternoon, if you're listening to the podcast, and it is the Huddle Breakdown. We are here, the three of us, James, Alan and Enda, and we're going to be looking back at Celtic's 2-1 victory against St Mirren on Wednesday evening. A very, very tight, cagey game in a quiet Celtic park on Wednesday evening, but a must-needed win as well from Celtic, sort of pulled from the ashes from O, who really did well to finish off. A really well-worked move that included Kyogo and Ohm and O to finish off the goal. He runs to the bench to celebrate with Brendan Rodgers, which I think we might touch on later on in the podcast. And we're also going to be looking forward to tomorrow's game against Ross County as well. James Allen, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
So, who wants to kick us off for this 2-1 victory over St Mirren? I mean, I missed the podcast earlier on this week, and I can imagine there might be a little bit of going over some very well-treaded ground at this point, James.
It pretty much went, as Alan and I spoke about, I think the last 15 minutes on Tuesday, roughly, Alan and I kind of previewed what we thought to expect. I think we were generally in agreement, right, Alan? I mean, it was... they were well organized. They weren't like, you know, super duper deep bunkering. But they also weren't, you know, pressing high, relatively narrow. They played 5-4-1 for the most part, as we thought they probably would. And they have a pretty decent keeper. And, you know, when you have some of the, constraints that we have relative to squad availability and strengths and weaknesses from the people that were playing at the wing position and in midfield, you know, it was tough to break them down. And pretty much the first hour, it was, you know, kind of more of the same that we've seen recently against that kind of opponent, like we saw with Hibs on the weekend. So I thought it was once again positive that the subs seemed to really bring something different to the game. I was really pleased to see Holm show what he's capable of doing, and I thought he was really, really good. I hope he stays fit and gets more game time. And personally was thrilled for O because, you know, I continue to be very optimistic on his kind of track as far as development and even the data limited. I mean, he's not even got Allen's threshold yet in league games at Celtic, including last season, let alone this season, when I've seen people, you know, being pretty critical of him on social media. And if you look at his full sample size, which again, limitation there, he's basically matching what Giakoumakis did during his tenure at Celtic. I think people have selective memory on Giakoumakis' tenure, mostly from that period when he was on fire, when Kyogo was out injured. But that was kind of buttressed by two periods when he was not on fire. So if you kind of blend all that out, you know, O's pretty much matching Giakoumakis. So I was thrilled. He, you know, it's always fun to see a younger player get excited like that. And so I'd say that was kind of my general summary and takeaways from the game.
Yeah, Alan, I mean, the whole Giakoumakis story has sort of taken over the last couple of weeks. Didn't help that Chris Sutton tweeted about it after the Champions League game. And it certainly doesn't help now that Giakoumakis has won the Newcomer of the Year award in the MLS, beating one Lionel Messi to the title. So, like, I mean, nobody's here saying that Giakoumakis is a bad player, but maybe we're saying that don't write off O because he's not doing what Giakoumakis did during the period that Kyogo was out injured.
Yeah, I mean, Giakoumakis' story, it is selective memory. I've just got to remember that, as far as I was concerned, he was playing a fantastic role at Celtic and he was doing it very well, but it wasn't a role that he wanted to play. So fair enough to him, and he's clearly doing very well out of his move, and good luck to the guy. As far as O is concerned, people have been getting on his back this season, as James said, and he's not even played a game. He hadn't even played a game's worth of minutes up till the weekend there. So it's a bit early. He actually did pretty well last season, and he's actually, in terms of his, I know it's not, I'm not talking about playing style, but in terms of his numbers, he's very similar to Abada, in that there's an awful lot of kind of bad decisions and dodgy looking technique in there, but there's also an awful lot of getting the ball in the box. There's an awful lot of getting on the end of things, awful lot of, just causing trouble and mayhem in the opposition area. There's a lot of good stuff there, quite chaotic, which is kind of what Celtic needed in a game like that, where it's become very predictable. We did sort of fall into that horseshoe. Listen, I'm in no way have I given up on O. Similarly, as far as the sort of hope Kyogo doesn't get injured type debate, to be honest with you, I don't think Maeda as a centre forward would be that massive a downgrade on Kyogo. I mean, Maeda got 24 goals in the J League from centre forward. He's preferred to Kyogo as a centre forward for the Japan national team, etc. So I'm not too worried. I'm not as worried about that position. I'm more worried about the wings, as I have been all season. I've been banging on about it. And it was a very similar story to the Hibs game. And actually, had James Forrest just hit the ball half an inch lower and scored against Hibs, that narrative would have been very different. And it would have been much the same narrative as this game, of a stodgy performance, too slow, too many touches on the ball, everything going wide and round. St Mirren, and St Mirren obviously had five strung across the back, four packed into midfield. So it was very difficult to play through. And therefore the onus was on the wingers. And, you look at Luis Palma and you sort of think, right, okay, have you laid the foundations in the performance to get the ball to your wingers? Well, Palma had a receiving pack score of 124. So 21 times Celtic got the ball to him. And by getting the ball to him, that pass had already taken out the St Mirren midfield or good parts of it. So he's either one-on-one with the defender or he's up against a depleted defensive unit, and from that you sort of say, well, okay, well, what did he do with that? Yeah, how many chances did he actually create? And he actually created four chances, but they were all of low quality because they all tended to be long shots in the end. He had four shots, but again, a collective XG of those four shots of 0.52, so they weren't all great chances. So I actually thought Palma did okay. He had a lot of the ball. But again, if you gave Jota the same volume of possession that Palma had, I suspect you'd have got an awful lot more. So that's just what it is. In fact, on Palma to finish with, because again, I'm not being overly critical. I just don't. What I really think is we've actually ended up in the same situation as we have had with Hak Sabanovic. Because if you look at Palma's strengths, he actually spots a pass pretty well. And he's got a hell of a shot on him. And he really does look like a number 10 forced out into the wing. I think as a number 10, he'd be pretty interesting because, he could go both ways. He'd have more space to operate in. And he, as I say, his shooting and his passing is actually pretty good. What he isn't good at is dropping a shoulder or, beating a player for pace or any of the stuff that you'd want a winger to do. So you end up with one player on one side who's, I think, a number 10. And then you've got a striker on the other side who you're trying to make into a winger. So all that being said then, what was refreshing was Yang coming on because I thought he was excellent. And it really was just about intent. And actually it was the same with Mikey Johnson at the weekend. As much as people criticise Mikey Johnson, he got the ball and he went forward and he kept going forward and he kept driving the defence backwards rather than them always having the ball in front of them, which is what happened with Forrest and Palmer a lot of the time. So yeah, Yang was excellent, and I think that aspect of wing play was encouraging. But I still don't see, you're kind of hoping that one of the four or one of the five comes on and does something, right? But there's no, you know, we're not seeing that consistency that we saw from Jota, where every game, pretty much, there'd be a level of threat offered. So that to me is the real problem area still, the wings. And you know, as I say, you either keep rotating it and hope that each day one of them pulls something out of the bag, or as I say, you have to fundamentally change your approach and change your shape.
Yeah.
Just to finish on, because the noticeable thing about the winning goal, it probably wasn't the only time, but it was certainly one of the few times that Celtic played through the middle. Right? We'd gone down wide, we'd gone down the wings time after time after time after again and gotten virtually nothing. The best thing that happened, we'd end up with a shot outside the box. We went through the middle at pace, and that's how the goal was scored. And that didn't happen. That hardly happened during the game, going through the middle at pace.
In Palmer's defense, I will say that it's incredibly difficult for a winger to create anything when there's 7 or 8 men in the box. You know, like if the options aren't there, then it's pretty much impossible to create anything from them with the St. Mirren players playing so deep. But also, I would say that the fact that James Forrest was playing on the right, that does limit the ability to switch wings as much as Celtic probably would like to. Like if you think back to last year, especially with Jota and Maeda, they were virtually impossible to mark because you didn't know which one was going to turn up in the left wing, which one was going to be on the right. They were constantly rotating that position. Palma actually did that against Atletico, and that was where his goal came from. He switched to the right and Maeda went to the left. But with James Forrest, he's so right side dominant that there's just no option to switch him to the left hand side for 5 minutes and get Palma out to the right to get him onto his dominant foot to cross the ball in. So I think more to the issue of the wingers, I think the fact that James Forrest is starting for Celtic in 2023 is more of an issue than Palma potentially not being able to create a chance when he gets the ball. Because you can't just be reliant on one winger to make something happen. There has to be some sort of effort there for the other winger to be able to do anything with the ball when he gets it, or the midfielders to make darting runs. So, and then the midfield, you're not getting the same dynamism with a David Turnbull as you are with an Aaron Moy, because with Aaron Moy, when he gets the ball, his first decision is not to take a shot from long range. It's to find the pass over the top of the defense and make that sort of defense cutting pass through the middle for a winger to run onto. So I think overall it was just, there is a lack of creativity probably in the Celtic team. And I don't know what the real solution is, James, to that horseshoe effect other than getting some more darting runs.
Yeah, I think that's one of the, that's why I'm part of the reason why I'm so excited and optimistic about home is the data profiling exercise that I've done in the past and I did on him suggested he might, and I, you know, just looking at some of his play in the past, some video on it, he seems to have that ability to, you know, play that kind of Tom Rogic type of pass. And I think that I'm coming around to the idea that Matt O'Reilly was probably flattering to deceive a little bit in that way, where the statistics were suggesting that he was doing that. But in fact, I think in retrospect, that was probably a system, thing, meaning that, you know, the average chance quality was as much a system issue manifesting rather than him like creating great, brilliant passes. And I think that sequence for the goal, the second goal, was the kind of thing that, you know, a real creative player is able to offer. And I'm not saying, you know, O'Reilly's barren of that kind of ability. It's just that he's kind of come back to earth a little bit this season with respect. And again, I'll commit a sin here and talk about the eye test. You know, I think that's another aspect here where I'm not seeing that same kind of creativity from O'Reilly. And that's where, you know, when you're in a deficit wide, and you know, Hatate's out when he's one of the ones able to have those kind of moments of brilliance, And McGregor's, outside of, you know, some of the over the top type of passes that he's gotten better and pretty good at providing, you know, he's not a line splitter. He's not the one that's going to play those kind of great through balls for the most part. So it'll be interesting to see. Because the early consensus, I think, and I agree with Alan, is that Bernardo's probably not that kind of creative player either, as skilled and, you know, as well as he's played so far, particularly defensively, but he's mostly been keeping it simple. I think Holmes, the one that really gives me hope that we've got one of those kind of game-changing creative types in midfield potentially. Again, we kind of still have to, it's early, we have to see a lot more of it, but that's where my hope resides until we see what goes on in January.
I do want to talk about the penalty situation, Alan, because I know you've been keeping track of the statistics behind it and stuff like that. So I promise you I will come back to that. But just one final point on the creativity and sort of the gameplay and the tactics for Celtic when they were chasing the game to try win it. For the final 20 or so minutes, Celtic had basically got every man in St. Mirren's side of the pitch. They were like Liam Scales and the rest of the defenders were on the halfway line. They were essentially playing midfield. The midfielders were further forward and the forwards were stuck behind St. Mirren defense. At that point, Alan, I genuinely don't see why Celtic need two defenders, two centre backs on the pitch, because they're not centre backs. They're playing centre midfield. Liam Scales was being asked to carry the ball forward, and even Nat Phillips turned up at right wing, as he did against Atletico at times when Celtic were chasing a result there, or against Hibs. I genuinely don't think Celtic need those centre backs on the pitch at that point. So is it crazy to say take those centre backs off and put on midfielders, so you have essentially four midfielders plus two extra in defence that are progressing the ball from where Callum McGregor normally would be? So you've essentially got six midfielders and then your forward players on top. Is that crazy? Is that stupid? Is that Football Manager nonsense?
The problem is, so if you take one of the centre backs on, then what will happen is that the full backs will feel the need that they have to drop back and create like of a three, because otherwise you can't leave your centre back one on one with their centre forward. They'll always have at least one centre forward. And St. Mirren usually tried to get two or three players into forward areas, the centre forward, then the two wide guys, you know, on either side, tried to, you know, support that striker. So if you're down to one, then the fullbacks essentially will be wary. And then effectively then whereas previously you're saying, I've got two players that are not doing a lot, why do I need two? Well, you've now got three players that are defending rather than two. So you actually make the situation worse, I would argue. So you want your fullbacks to be empowered and free, and McGregor to kind of press on. And you do need the insurance of an extra man. You can't just defend 1v1. I mean, I think Barcelona did that on occasions, but not, you know, you've got to be brilliant to get away with that, really, and have a lot of pace at the back, especially, and a good sweeper keeper who will become that third centre or second centre back on occasion. And we certainly don't have that. So, yeah, I think it's, listen, I think what you said before, Ender, about combinations, this isn't about a magic one individual is going to solve this for Celtic. It's all about coming up with a blend and a balance as a team. It's a team thing, and it's a fragile thing. So, you know, Celtic were very effective with Maïdé as a winger for the last 2 years, most of the last 2 years. But even though every week we tell you why he's not an effective winger, but the reason that he was effective was because within the constraints of, or the, within the system that Postecoglou had, it was that balance of that front three. It was Jota and Maïdé on the wings. So what that gave you was, it gave you one that was going to stretch the defence and one that was going to keep them thinking, is he going to go inside? Is he going to go outside? He's constantly on the ball. What's he going to do? You know, is he going to cut in? Is he going to go around the back of us, etc.? And always wanting to go forward. So it was that combination of outrageous pace and control, trickery and unpredictability that gave Celtic a really balanced front line as far as threat. So you never, you know, as a defender, you never knew what was going to happen. Whereas what we've got now, or, you know, especially with Palmer and Forrest, is players who, you know, because Forrest hasn't got the pace anymore and Palmer has never had it, is the ball just stopping and coming back. And then if you put Maïdé in, And no one's stretching the play on the other side. The ball's just coming back again. And I made this, I'm not going to do it again because it was too time consuming, but I made this point against the Hibs game, showed, you know, a number of negative passes that the wingers played. And it was just outrageous. It was like 70, 80% of their passes were what I call negatives. They were either sideways or backwards. So it's all about balance. We've got to find the balance. We're in this ridiculous situation, ridiculous because of the resources that we have. We're hoping that some of the players, some of the project players, actually step up consistently. And if they do, you know, they might do it for five or six games. And then does the next one come in and does he do it for five or six games? Because I don't see another Jota, frankly, and I don't see another Aaron Moy in that lot. You know, I agree with James in terms of, you know, home. And he's just got a beautiful technique. He's got lovely balance, and he takes care of the ball. And he's also got a little bit of, you know, dig and a bit of aggression and pace about him. And as I say, I thought Yang was excellent when he came on. He's just really positive, but also with purpose and with skill. Even if he didn't get his cross in, he won a corner, right? So that's a positive. That's like a positive move. You've got a positive outcome from that, right? So, but I still think ultimately we've got to find that balance. And I think I get the sense that we're going to have to team and ladle throughout the season and just hope that on the day, one or two players turn it on. Because I don't see a consistent 11 that every week you know what you're going to get like we had last season.
It is a tricky time of the year. Like it is, this is where the real league is won and lost really when these European games are on, because you've got on top of the European games, you've got the two league games or the League Cup or the Scottish Cup coming up now soon as well. So you're basically playing two games a week the whole way through now until the middle of February. And that is tough for any squad, especially a squad that is depleted like Celtic's with the amount of injuries that they have. But yeah, I would just like to see Celtic play with a little bit more purpose and a little bit more creativity and imagination when it comes to what they're doing. And it's not just recycling the ball from one wing to another. It's like, if you think back to like Celtic when they had Juranovic and Maeda on the right wing, and there was this lovely little combination play that they used to play where it would go up to Maeda, Juranovic would be running off his shoulder, he'd get the ball, he'd play it into Matt O'Reilly, and by that time Dyson Maeda had made a darting run into the box. Like Celtic played that, how many times did Celtic score from that or get a chance from that? And it was able to just carve a team open within 3 to 4 passes. They just don't seem to be doing that right now, and I don't know if that's a game plan thing that Brendan Rodgers wants a little bit more tiki-taka, play it out through the lines, or if it's a confidence thing, or if it's just, you know, it's just not something that they're doing at the minute, James. But like there's not as many combination plays as we've been used to grown used to see with Celtic over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I to me it seems like it's more likely to be a personnel issue, meaning that, you know, you mentioned Juranovic, that was a strength of his, not really what Johnston has a glaring strength about him with that kind of movement. You know, as stout as a defender he is, and he's got some pace about him given his size, he's not that laterally quick. You know, Juranovic kind of had more of the water bug type of movement. And so, you know, even on that side, you've got a reconstitution of kind of strengths and weaknesses of these players. And obviously, you know, we've kind of, beat the Jota thing to death. So, you know, it's just there's different types of players with different profiles. And that's why I thought the second goal was of note, was because it was more like that, meaning that you had that kind of triangular movement and guys making runs and those that nice, you know, interplay that created the goal. So, yeah, I it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much of it is younger players coming through and developing into some of that. Because I just, you know, the Greg Taylor, Johnston, Turnbull, you know, those cogs in the machine are probably just, you know, Palma. There's just certain limitations there. So that's my view, is more so that than I don't think Rodgers has made some major. I mean, I think the prioritization of possession over unbridled aggression has probably been taken from a 10 to an 8, so it's not crazy. It's just a slight tweak. And so that's where I think it is more a personnel issue.
Another penalty missed. Alan, tell me I'm wrong and tell me Celtic are not that bad at penalties, because
PKs, you mean PKs.
Certainly feels they are.
So yeah, listen, we've all missed two this season, but you got to go back seasons to gather sort of meaningful stats on this, because no laughing at the back, but penalties are quite rare events unless you follow one particular team. Cough. So to get a decent sample, you got to go back a bit. So in terms of tracking them within my own sort of records, in the basically long story short, I think since about 17-18, we're hitting 76%, and the XG of a penalty is about 77%. So essentially we're average, but you're just kind of average. Now, I think, if you really wanted to look into this more closely, what I would then tend to do is say, well, let's look at the penalties scored versus missed and understand the context of them, like how crucial were they? So, for example, Giakoumakis missing in the last minute at 0-0 at home to Livingston is clearly a crucial miss. Somebody missing when you're 4-0 up, the 90th minute, whatever, is neither here nor there, right? So you'd need to look at all that as well. In general, I think two things. One is overall, so this is an average. This isn't really telling you much about any individual. We're average, essentially. Specifically, I think, we have had in the past, if I think back to my records again, Chris Commons was an incredibly effective penalty taker. I think his success rate was well over 80%. Moussa Dembele was probably the best of recent times. He hit 13 out of 14, which is 93%. And then Sinclair hit 12 out of 14, which is, high 80s, 86, 87%. So those are the last three that I think have been... that had a number of penalties to take. The other issue that we've got is that, Turnbull, who's, that's the first penalty in his career that he's missed. I think he's taken six from Motherwell and Celtic, and that's the first one he's missed. But he doesn't play. He's not all guaranteed to be on the pitch. So you kind of need a penalty taker that is probably going to be on the pitch. Otherwise, it's a revolving door. You don't get to sort of Tavernier levels of muscle memory where you're taking one every week, and therefore you're very skilled at that particular specific skill set, because you practice it so much. So we're not kind of anywhere near that territory. I think it would be useful to have somebody who's designated and who's going to play. My next thought would probably be Luis Palma. He's 5 from 5 in his career, and he's obviously clearly a very good technician as far as the way he hits the ball. So, but overall, it's not, I think with my reading of it as a Celtic fan is there's certain myths that all football fans hold to be true. One of them is that we don't score enough goals from corners, that you concede too many goals from corners, and that you would be better if you played two up front, and we don't score enough penalties. And these are things, if you ask any supporter of any football club, they'd all say these four things about their club. I'd almost guarantee it, right? In actual fact, as far as the corners and penalties are concerned, we're just average. We're not very good. We're not very bad. We're just kind of average. But, having said all that, it would be nice to have a recognised, dedicated penalty taker that you felt confident about when they came up. As I say, probably Moussa Dembele is the last one that you sort of, you knew when he stepped up, and you thought, yeah, we'll be all right here.
Dembele had the lovely mix between arrogance and technique. Like he had confidence that he was going to score it, and that's half of the battle when it comes to penalties. So Turnbull is the logical choice for this. He should be the best at the penalties, and overall at training I would say he is, whether it's a mindset thing or a concentration thing. But give it to Joe Hart. Did you see his penalty a couple of years back? Absolutely smashes it into the net. So give him an opportunity. Yeah. keep going backwards until you eventually get to the main man and goals. So going forward, it's never I am annoyingly optimistic about the team this season, probably to my own detriment. I currently would put this stage of performance against Hibs and St Mirren down to the amount of games that Celtic are currently playing with the players that they're currently playing in these positions. Ultimately, that comes down to a squad issue, but that's a bigger conversation. But is this type of performance following the Hibs performance this weekend, is that something that's starting to worry you? Or do you think that maybe the European form has masked what Celtic have been doing domestically a little bit?
Yeah, put me in the concerned pile. And Alan's talked about it. I mean, we've mentioned it in the past. We've kind of got a magic, and I say that tongue in cheek, a magic non-penalty XG differential threshold, right? To be a spreadsheet shagger for a second here. And when you start getting closer to one, you know, that's when these kind of Hibs games and the St. Mirren games, where you all it is an organized, well or decently managed side that set up defensively, kind of playing for a draw. And, you know, those really turn into coin flip kind of games with normal variance relative to dropping any points. And I think that's what we're talking about here is, you know, the difference between, you know, 95 points in the league versus 98 versus 92, right? I mean, that's the range here in okay, you know, we getting into that zone is where you'd say, okay, well, that's kind of where we would expect the league winner to be. And, you know, so
a lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I'm still not seeing enough yet that I'm confident that we're going to kind of stretch that on a durable basis with the personnel that we have, given what the transfer window was and the mix of players combined with, you know, some of the injuries. And that's, you know, you get back to, you know, you have a stretch of time when Hart maybe has a rough stretch, or, you know, as I've mentioned in the past, you know, our opponent's bad finishing has swung the pendulum a little bit. Whereas, and we saw that again on Wednesday, is that the opposition keeper play has been better, right? And actually quite good against us, unfortunately, so far this season in total. So if opponents start to just finish a little better, you know, that's the kind of variance that I talk about, where you just need two or three games that should have been 3 points that maybe the pendulum swings to, you know, you drop points in a draw, let alone losses. And that, to your point, Enda, this is the time of season when that's more likely to happen. You know, particularly as we get into the dog days of winter. And, you know, I can imagine being, because I'm over 10 years older than Joe Hart. You know, as the weather gets worse, you know, us older guys have a harder time staying limber. and you know, the dynamism of our lateral movement suffers a bit as the temperature drops.
I wonder where this is going.
Yeah, well, calm down now. Calm down. Yeah, got to keep our G rating intact. But yeah, so that's kind of the those are a summary of why I'm increasingly on the concern pile. And this is not new. I've been, you know, that's why I talked about you know, the concern of Rangers being relatively proactive in sacking Beal, and then relatively looks like they hired at least a competent person, not, you know, so that again brings the risk profile of the league campaign back into what I can consider kind of equilibrium, which is we're the favorites, but not to the point where I'm, you know, nice and comfortable about it.
Yeah. Alan, before I get your opinion on that, like, if you were given, let's say, I'll give you a hypothetical here. So memory is a weird thing, and people forget that under Postecoglou, the November to December stretch was hella tight. Like, Celtic scraped by a lot of big games in terms of pulling it out of the bag late on, you know, there's plenty of goals at last minute. The Ralston header against Ross County is one of them that always stands out to me as sort of one that built momentum for the season. But let me give you this hypothetical. If Celtic continue on playing not so great at the minute, this is just domestically not so great, but they do get results like this one up until Christmas, the January transfer market comes around. Everyone seemed to be off the general consensus that Celtic needed a goalkeeper and a left back in the summer, and that didn't happen. Is a goalkeeper and a left back still the priority signing for Celtic until the end of the season, in your opinion, if they keep playing the way they're playing at the minute, or do they need another winger?
Well, I've got broken record, right? You know, the shopping list is the same as it was at the end of last season. It's a goalkeeper, a left back, you know, a box-to-box, potentially a box-to-box midfielder, definitely a winger because Jota left, that was an extra one, and potentially another striker. I would say all those things would help the squad for sure. But the other piece of business that I kept mentioning, you know, probably didn't get as much attention, but I kept mentioning it as massively on the to-do list, is they've got to get rid of players. They've got to get people out the door. We've got far too many players. You can't go and buy another six players when you've already got like 30-odd. So it's, to me, it's still imperative that we get a load of players out the door. I mean, I don't, you know, saw the accounts, we're no danger. I think wage bill something like 51% of turnover. We're not in anywhere near FSR danger zone in that sense, but that's on the back of record revenue. So, you know, but having said all that, it's just not healthy to have that many players. So we need to make space in the squad for that refreshing. I hope there is some refreshing done because, you know, I just before I get into that then, so listen, to last season, just as a reminder, last season, 6th of November through to the 24th of December, the scores were Dundee United 4-2, but that was two goals in the 90th minute to win that from 2-2. Motherwell 2-1, Ross County 2-1, Aberdeen 1-0, Livingston 2-1. And then we kind of blew away St Johnstone and Hibs before getting a draw at Ibrox in January. So James is right. You know, that November, December spell was full of sticky wins.
And that was me that said that. That was me. Was it? Come on. Yeah, give me credit when I pull out some stats.
We know that, you know, it's right that, you know, this is how it's going to be now for the next sort of, we've got 13 matches in the next kind of before the end of the year. So we obviously don't have League Cup semi-final and final. So that's a blessing in some ways, I suppose. but it's a lot of games. But so back to the original question. Then I'm kind of in the slightly concerned pile as well. So if you look at all of the expected points models, and there's an increasing number of them around now, and so there's generally two types of model. Let me just remind people, because it can be a little bit confusing. There's people who to look at what happened in the games, look at the XG, etc., and work out what would if you basically played those games like 10,000 times, what should the league table look like? And you know, Celtic are 5 points ahead, but most of those models are saying that it pretty much be equal on top, if not the Rangers were maybe 1 point ahead at that point. And then what the other type of expected model does is it says, okay, given what's happened here, I'm going to project forward and predict what's going to happen based on what has happened. So if performance continues the way it is, what will happen? And, you know, again, plenty of caveats for sure, but some of those models have proven to be quite well predictive in the past. So they're worth keeping an eye on. And they're predicting at the moment, you know, that essentially it's a coin flip. It's like 50-50, you know, at the top of the table. So I'm concerned for that reason, because I can see that the underlying stats are, we're still giving up too many chances. We, not by my data, but certainly by Opta data, we just about got beat below one XG against as an average, but that's been above one all season. I've still got it above one on my data across all matches. And you know, the differential, the XG differential just isn't enough. Our XG differential is actually second best in the league at the moment, but our post-shot XG differential is actually by miles the best. So that's shots that's just looking at shots that hit the target. And that's probably, to be honest with you, a reflection of that Celtic's attackers are better than the attackers at Ibrox, which I think we all kind of knew anyway. And that's going to be their issue, really. But we're not matching them in terms of defensive solidity. We're still giving up too many chances. So to me, you know, it's frustrating because, again, you look at the resource differential, you look at the future resource differential, it's going to be even bigger. And yet on the field, that differential is not reflective of that or not yet. On the other side of it, of the coin, you know, clearly I've been pretty happy actually with our European performances. I know the results. I know better than last season, but the performances have been, I think, very, very good. And it feels like we're just waiting. We're waiting for things to kind of click, but we seem to be waiting every week. And as I say, I've almost come to the conclusion that we're not going to get a sort of a starting 11 that's going to play the vast majority of minutes in games, or that's going to steamroll the teams. We're almost on a week by week, you know, who's in form type of thing, because we're dealing with young players a lot of the time, dealing with players that haven't established themselves yet. They're going to blow hot and cold. So, but also that therefore introduces a huge amount of variability, which Yang are you going to get? The one that was tremendous for 25 minutes at the weekend there, or the one that just continually gave the ball away and couldn't get past his man? Who knows? I don't know which one will turn up on any given week. So, and I'm not picking on Yang, I'm just saying as an example, I could equally apply that conversation to any of the young players that we've brought in. So, so yeah, I'm pretty anxious, not anxious, but I'm certainly concerned, like James. You know, let's not pretend otherwise that the underlying data suggests it's going to be a really, really tight race. Let's not pretend that, you know, Clement is a, you know, competent manager, and looks like he's certainly going to get more out of that group of players than Bill was capable of doing. One brilliant performance at Dundee doesn't make a season. They've got to do it week after week after week after week, and that's not easy. It isn't easy, as we know, right? So I'm not, you know, I'm just saying there's plenty of reasons to be, you know, concerned, legitimately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, I'll throw a couple of numbers into the mix here, and to that speaks to this, provide more context. So, and again, these are stats bombs. So they break out through different phases of play. And so one that I key on, particularly relative to the title race, is XG from open play specifically, you know, so that excludes set pieces, corners, you know, free kicks, et cetera, and my thinking is we need to be the firm leader in that, because generally speaking, the makeup of our, you know, squad is not going to be dominant in corners and set pieces. And historically, I think that probably is, you know, that's been the case. And so as of that, to Alan's point, so we're conceding over double the rate of XG that Rangers have so far this season. Now, again, there's issues. There's been the injuries and, you know, so, but that speaks to the gulf that has to get closed, and their, the rate that they're conceding chances is about the same as we did last season. Now that ours hockey sticked up a little bit late in the season after, you know, we'd kind of lock things up so that, you know, I think that's a little misleading relative to kind of the full and firing Ange side, which was, you know, we've talked about, it was below 0.3 from open play when Celtic were firing under Ange consistently over long stretches of time. So Rangers aren't quite that low, but they're in that neighborhood of what league winning teams have had in that kind of 0.35 to 0.4 from open play in prior seasons. And we're right about, you know, just under 0.8. So that needs to come down, excuse me. And the chance creation is about the same and has been the same from open play. So that's where you get that differential is significant. And the differences in finishing, not only Rangers not finishing much, and they've been so putrid in that regard that even if they just swing back from putrid to bad, it's going to be an improvement. Like you saw with, you know, the Dundee game, and then, you know, opposition finishing against each of the teams. Our opponents have been putrid, and that's not likely to persist for the whole season. So that's the kind of stat that has me, you know, anxious, where even if we do improve, which I suspect we will, as, you know, we get healthier and players get back, and maybe even with some reinforcements in the January window, the gulf is so significant that to kind of get to that point where I'm less concerned about these normal variance things, there's a lot of improvement that needs to take place, not just, you know, reasonable amounts of improvement.
Mm-hmm. Celtic do have a striker coming in January, by the way. I'd say he's coming in before January. Johnny Kenny returning from loan from Shamrock Rovers at the end of the season. So, I mean, if he's on the same trajectory as Liam Scales was after his return from Aberdeen, I mean, we're in for an absolute ball of a time with Johnny Kenny. Just as you were saying about the getting the players out, Alan, I had a look at the Celtic squad on the website just to see like who I would purge if I had the option. So, this is just who I would get rid. And now we're not talking about, I have slightly considered the UEFA situation where you need the homegrown players essentially, in your squad, but I've also disregarded that in many ways because, there are a few players that you just need to get rid of that fall into that bracket. So in terms of the goalkeepers, I think you're getting rid of Benji Segrest. You know, I don't know why he was brought in the first place. Defenders were really bloated in. I think getting rid of Nat Phillips, send him back. Kobayashi, no point in being at the club, really. Bernabe, no point in having him at the club. Probably keep Stephen Welsh, to be honest. I think he's decent and he's good to have in the squad. Ralston, we don't have any option but to keep, but if we had an upgrade on a backup right back, I think you're upgrading on Ralston. I think you're getting rid of James McCarthy. You're probably getting rid of Kwan, who is basically the Itaguchi of this transfer window, where he came in and he just has been the invisible man in Celtic's midfield. Probably getting rid of James Forrest or letting him retire. And then forward line, probably striking when the iron's hot with Lulibada in terms of his transfer fee and what you're going to get from him, because, I mean, you probably would have got a lot of money for him over the summer, but the fact that he hasn't featured a lot this year, you're probably not getting a lot of money for him. Mikey Johnson as well, and probably, unfortunately, Marco Tilio, who, again, once again, an invisible signing from this year's summer transfer window. So you're talking a good chunk of about 8 or 9 players there that you can name top of your head that don't feature at all for Celtic and haven't featured over the last 2 years, or when they would be called upon, they're probably not good enough to fit into the team. So a lot of work to be done getting players out, Alan. I think you're right, though, because like even if you talk about Manchester United, loads of people think that the first job for Radcliffe, if he takes over Manchester United, is to bring in Mbappe and loads of superstars. But his job is to get rid of all the deadwood that United have. And I guess Celtic are in a similar position whereby they're one of the biggest sides. They are the biggest side in Scotland. And they've got all these players, but they're probably not going to get any money back that they spent in terms of those players. So it just has to be sort of a write-off of doing business.
Yeah, and also you've got to then add in, we've got four players out on loan that are unlikely to feature. So Idiguchi, Montgomery, Shaw, Haksabanovic are all out on loan. So, you know, I think you're a bit being a bit harsh on Tilio. We've never even seen the kid. So I think we've got to wait and see how he develops. He's very much a project, really. So give that kid a chance. But yeah
well, I said 2 weeks ago he was going to be the Jota replacement. So don't mind what I say. I have no consistency.
You just say whatever for clicks and likes. I know. but the serious point is there's probably anywhere between sort of, you know, 10 and 15 players arguably that we really need to trim out the squad. And like you say, whether we get any transfer money for them, it's really just getting them off the wage bill and giving Rodgers more flexibility to bring in some reinforcements and, you know, improve on the situation that should have been dealt with in the summer, really. And as I say, I said many times before, we've got to just up the level of churn to sort of create more overall revenue, which I don't think any of these players that you mentioned will do, unfortunately. But you might add on to that a surprise sale of a star name, although I don't think there's any pressing financial need to do that, but you know, that could happen. If one of the players decides that it's time to move on. So all these things are to play for, although that the latter scenario is less likely in the winter than it is in the summer. But yeah, loads of work to do. And as I say, disappointing it wasn't done in the summer. I think the feeling seemed to be in the building that they'd done their best and they'd really tried hard, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, we're demanding. We have high expectations, et cetera. But yeah, loads of work to do, basically, long story short.
Absolutely.
The only other aspect that concerns me is, and again, it's total speculation, but it's one of those kind of things where I could see it is, you know, if you're an agent or somebody who's in charge of the custody of clients and placing them in their career, you know, if you see clubs that have a graveyard of players whose careers are being basically flushed down the toilet, and we have a roster of those guys where, you know, they're in kind of tweenerville. They're not getting game time. There's no real place for us to play them. You know, the lowland league's just not, you know, viable. And I know there's talk of some of the structural shifts from the SFA and that kind of thing. And some interesting things that might be happening there. But again, if you've got 10 guys effectively that all they're doing is training, they're not getting any game time. And these are players that range from, you know, these are guys that should be playing it, given their age profiles. So if the club's not moving people on fast enough because they don't want to take some accrual write down on the financial statements and that kind of stuff, I mean, that you get too many of that, and it, you know, you have disgruntled players, which I could see, and disgruntled agents. Again, I'm not saying any of this happens. I could see it being an issue because this bloated squad is not a new thing. I mean, we've had a lot of guys that have not played much in recent years that probably should be for their own careers. And that's another risk aspect of this that I could see being an issue.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of risk and player load and not having replacements, Ross County tomorrow at 12:30, followed by Atletico Madrid on Tuesday. So are we expecting changes from Brendan Rodgers this weekend, Alan? What do you think? It's like, does Home come in? Does Yang come in? Does O come in? Like, there has to be some consideration that if these players are going to play throughout the season as substitutes, that they need to be able to start some games so that the players that we're using in the Champions League get a rest before the games. I think that's very reasonable.
Yeah, we don't want another hip situation where clearly the team was you know, physically, mentally jaded. So you want to kind of avoid that. So that does, so it's a balance, right? You don't want to have thousands of, you know, dozens of changes, et cetera, 5, 6, 7 changes. That doesn't help the team in terms of fluidity either. So it's a tricky one. And again, players that came on and made an impact on the bench, will they be as impactful, you know, starting against fresh defences is another thing you've got to think about. But yeah, I think you need to look at the schedule in the round and try and think how best to navigate through. Do you do things like, you know, I mean, again, Liam Scales, certainly Peter Grant in commentary and Greg Taylor on the pitch thought that, you know, Scales was at fault for the St Mirren goal. He was probably the worst in terms of too many touches, too slow on the ball, getting the ball forward. You give him a rest, give Navrotsky some game time. It might be one thing I'd think about. I don't think we can just keep playing the game of, right, Turnbull, it's your turn. No, next game it's Bernardo, next game it's... We can't do that either. So I think there's a balance here to be struck between players who, like O'Reilly, who went off in midweek, and rightly so, resting up the O'Reillys and the McGregors and the Kyogos. But in some instances, I think, for example, on the wing and the other number eight position, you almost need to give somebody a run of games and say, right, you're playing the next three games. So is it going to be Turnbull? I mean, Turnbull actually was okay. He scored a great goal. He did okay in the time he was on the pitch. Home also. And Bernardo had done quite well, especially in European games. And actually, in a way, Atletico Madrid, I'd be quite keen to see a midfield of Bernardo and Matt O'Reilly, because it's going to give you a lot of physical and defensive strength. So does that mean that you give him the game at Ross County? Because then, so I think I don't know the answer to all these things, but these are the sort of things I'd be thinking. I'd be thinking, can I take the burden off of some guys? Would Holm do a good job in McGregor's role at Ross County, for example? Right? Do I need to play O'Reilly for another 90 minutes at Ross County? Versus, how do I get minutes into, if I'm going to play Bernardo, how do I get more minutes into his game? If I'm going to play Holm as a number eight, how do I get more minutes into his game? If Yang actually is the informed winger, how do I get more minutes into him? So for me, it's about, you know, balancing all of those concerns, I would say.
What about yourself, James?
It is a tough turnaround. Playing up in Dingwall on a Saturday, and then I know you Europeans are, you know, it's not like us US people are used to driving 10 hours to get places. So, you know, this stuff, you people struggle with this. But, getting from Dingwall back to Glasgow, I say this tongue in cheek for the people that are not watching, hopefully. So getting back to Glasgow and then turning around, getting to Madrid for a Tuesday game. It's a Tuesday game, I'm pretty sure. To go play a team that, you know, they're going to have to put forth like 110% kind of effort to be competitive. And a lot of it's going to be defending. A lot of it's going to be kind of exhaustive output physically. That's a tough, you know, as far as these kind of transitions that we were just talking about this time of season, that's a tough, one of the tougher iterations of it. And so I would think there would be a little bit more rotation. I mean, a part of that, we saw that with Carter Vickers. Probably not going to be the kind of game that's going to be stressful for him on Saturday, hopefully. I'm fairly optimistic going into, I always say this, against a Malky Mackay, you know, managed team. I think he's an okay level manager for the league, but he tends not to play that kind of bunker defensive, particularly at home, system against us. He tends to be a little bit more progressive and, ask his team to play a little bit more actual football. So, you know, I think we'll get our chances as a result of that. It won't be quite as difficult as it has been recently. So, I think it'll be interesting. But because of how tough this turnaround could be, I'd probably prefer to lean towards more rotation than less, whatever that line is that Rodgers is comfortable with, particularly guys that are going to have to put the shift in, meaning, you know, midfield in particular. Worry about guys like O'Reilly, who have just been really putting it out there. And if he puts in a full shift on Saturday and then has to turn around and tries to put in another full one on Tuesday, I mean, that's a lot to ask. McGregor, we've talked about a lot, So yeah, I'd say those are the two where I wouldn't be displeased if we got, even if it's, get up 2-0 and then sub them out at halftime or after 60 minutes, you know, that kind of thing. But try to get some of these guys a little bit of freshness heading into Tuesday.
Yeah, I think Matt O'Reilly would be the number one name I would drop this Saturday for sheer exhaustiveness and our need for him in the Champions League. He's the main midfielder that Celtic definitely need to function fully and be able to have it in his legs. I'm not being a Liam Scales apologist. He could have done better for the goal, right?
Stop it.
Why was Nat Phillips where he was? What was he doing? Why was he tackling the player at right back when Johnson was there? It's an entirely different situation if he's playing where he's supposed to be playing and not fucking 20 yards away from his other centre back. But
to be fair, that's why I said I was quoting Peter Grant and Greg Taylor because the same sort of thought occurred to me. I thought it was a little bit harsh on Scales, but I just felt he looked. Scales has been great, and again, when we talk about the season so far, we have to talk about. I'm hesitating to do this, but you know the differential in fixture list, and the reason I'm hesitant is because I think the gap between the top two and the rest of the league is so big it almost doesn't matter whether you're playing away or at home. You know, against most of these teams, to be fair. Having said all that, you know, Easter Road, Hib, and Tynecastle, etc., they should be tough places to go. And Liam Scales has played a lot of those games, and he's had a reasonable amount of defending to do, and he's done a good job. Where I think we struggle with Scales is at home to St Mirren, where you need to move the ball that little bit quicker. That's the issue, I think, the major issue.
And that's why you bring on a midfielder, like I said, Alan.
Well, it's actually a situation, you know, made for the Lennon trick? Was it Lennon or Rogers? I can't remember the trick of using Bitton as the ball playing centre back. And I guess we've got one. We've got Iwata. We've got somebody that can play that role. And so actually against a bunker team, having somebody who's mobile that can move the ball forward quickly from centre back, like Iwata, is a decent shout. So it's not playing one centre back, but it's having somebody there who you feel you know is going to move the ball quickly.
Yeah. Right. I think that's where we'll park the podcast for this week. Hopefully we'll have better performance this weekend, and that is to be followed by, I would say, a nervy performance in Spain on Tuesday night. So we will be back reviewing those games as normal for next week. But until then, thanks for watching, and thanks to Alan and James. And before we finish up, you might have noticed there's a weird caterpillar shadow above my upper lip. It's barely visible on the camera, so bear with me. I'm not just doing it for the shits and giggles. I am doing it for Movember, which is a charity event for men's mental health, for men's charities, for men's cancer. And the link is in the description below if you want to donate. You don't have to, but it's there if you do want to donate to Movember and watch me grow probably the most pathetic mustache you've ever seen in your life over the next month or so on the podcast. So thanks to everybody for watching and listening, and we will chat to you next week. Good luck.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.